Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. G'day, it's Trent here, and it is so lovely to have you company today for episode 357. This week on the show, it's a new segment as we introduce Vintage for Hire, which is going to look at the top 20 vintage villains this round. We're going to change it up, and by that we mean 70s to 80s vintage figures. We're going to pick the best 20 villains from around the room.
So that's five each.
And if there's time, we're going to do a bit of reading, watching, playing. Joining me today in the Toy Power studio, we've got Ben.
G'day, g'day.
Frank.
Hello, hello.
And Scotty.
Hello there.
And Scotty, you have devised this segment. Tell us more.
Occasionally when I'm driving from one side of Adelaide to the other, I have a spark of inspiration, an idea as I'm sitting at the traffic lights, and I figured, what better way to celebrate toys than to do a countdown? Because, damn it, everybody loves a countdown. And I settled on the number 20 because, well, there's four of us, and we could easily come up with five figures that, in our collections, represent what we think are the standout villain for this segment in any given in our collections. So that was the impetus of what we're going to do tonight, gentlemen. We're going to count down. In no particular order, you can list your villains in whatever number status you want. So if you've got a 1 to 5 in front of you, you can start at 1, you can start at 5, you can start at 3.
Sure.
Doesn't matter. We're going to go through. The order doesn't matter. The countdown doesn't matter. We're just here to have good time and talk about 20 villains. I did set one agenda. Our goal tonight, without any sort of get-together or conspiring, is to choose 20 villains and not have any crossover between the four
of us. 20 unique villains. The other thing is, but when you're selecting your villain, you can't pick it from the same property. So I can't pick five Masters of the Universe villains.
Yep.
Got to be unique property. So we're going to get a bit of diversity in this list.
And that could mean there might still, at the end of this list, there might be four Masters villains because each of us have potentially chosen one.
And I think we've also put in the we've got also backup choices. So for argument's sake, if someone calls out Shredder, and guess what, Shredder's on Ben's list, then we go, that's been taken. Ben's going to have to revert to his one of his backup choices.
Okay,
so
clear as crystal, I think it is.
Clear as crystal.
It took us crystal clear. Yeah. It took us a while to get there during the week. I think we had a few back and forwards clarifying the rules, but I think we're there now. And there's only one thing left to do, and that is play some brand new intro music.
Intro music from the Master of Trent's mixtape.
Here we go.
It's time. Vintage for hire.
Oh, nice. There we go.
That sounds very Pendulum. I really like that. Yeah.
And the Vintage for Hire is really Villain for Hire, but with vintage toys. So that's it.
I was outvoted 3-1 on the name of that show. This segment. I came up with the Toy Power Top 20 Vintage Villain. The Toy Power Top 20 Vintage Villain Countdown Review.
It didn't sound as well as the pendulum backing beat, so Trent changed it.
All right, there we go. All right, I'm going to start us off because I've brought in physically my characters from my collection. And number one on my list, or if we count it down, number 20, is the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man by Kenner from the Real Ghostbusters line. I loved this toy line as a kid, and looking through, there's a number of really cool villains. I even brought in a backup because you know what I'm like in terms of selection. But I love some of the monsters. Nice. So there's this werewolf guy, and he's got the screaming action, right? Like, how-woo! Ooh. So there's some really cool villains in this line, ghosts, and they've got fright features in the villains as well. But I had to settle on Stay Puft. Yep. Such a wonderful film, that 84 Ghostbusters film. And one of the most iconic moments in that film is the reveal of Gozer the Destroyer in what they try to come up with as the most friendly version they can imagine, albeit he's the size of a New York City skyscraper. I never had him as a kid, but loved and adored this line and always wanted to get my Slimer and Stay Puft. And finally, got a vintage one. This was picked up from a toy fair. And also have the Kenner re-release on card.
Beautiful.
So there he is.
Well done. Great call. All right, just to pretext my shout-outs, you won't hear Shredder or Skeletor being called out tonight. What? The boys have already found out that when we're in our little group chat. And they were like, what? You know, the audience isn't going to believe this. Well, if anyone questions my passion towards those two, I've had them tattooed on my body. So there's just, you know, too bad, too sad. But I looked at this many ways. Like, what do I do? Do I, you know, take the nostalgic route, the heavily, you know, ingrained, my favorite characters? No. I decided to take a bit of John Clawfield route, and I threw my nostalgia out the window. I thought, I'm going to choose ones that have villains that have absolutely spoken to me, right? So in my 25 years or something of collecting, what villains have I seen in, you know, that fit in between the 1970 and 1989 that I never had as a kid, probably maybe
never had as a kid. Right.
And that have spoken to me so much that I've had to add them into my collection. So every character on my list I own now, but never owned as a child. So starting off this list, coming in a 1977 from the Mego line, it is, of course, Baron Kaza from the Micronauts line. This guy is probably arguably the oldest toy in my collection. He's a very Darth Vader-esque, looking figure, all black, red eyes and things. But it blows me away by the technology that Mego put into these toys, and I think it was Takara as well. Magnetic arms, magnetic limbs. You can take the whole character apart, put him back together. He comes with a horse, and you can make him into a centurion?
Centaur
as well. He comes with big rocket launchers. They fire like, you know, no one's tomorrow. It was pre-choking hazard era, so they got through the safety, you know, lines and stuff. Baron Kaza is absolutely phenomenal. The fact that in the Marvel comics, they depict him as really, you know, small miniature aliens from another planet. So I've always looked at him, you know, through rosy glasses that he is life size, you know, in my collection in toy version. And Baron Kaza is just amazing. He's the best of Darth Vader and Doctor Doom melded into one character. So Baron Kaza's on my list as the first call out.
Very nice, very nice. A bit like Ben, I tried to not pick the Shredders and Megatrons of the world. Like, to me, that, you know, they get enough sort of love. So I went with the ones that aesthetically are just unquestionably villains. You look, even if you know nothing about that toy line, you're looking at a bad guy. You know that much.
I didn't do that. Well, with Stay Puft.
Yes,
he looks like a goodie, doesn't he?
Looks quite friendly until he squashes you.
Yeah.
Given our recent chat with Floppy about Mask, I had to start with Mask. And this is one I owned as a kid. I think pretty sure it's in Trent's collection these days. But I'm talking about Piranha. So for those that don't know Mask, this is the purple bike with the sidecar. All purple and black, you know, red sort of highlights. But also the driver, the figure he comes with, a guy by the name of Sly Rax, no less.
Yep.
But he is that 80s, he's wearing jeans, he's got biker boots, he's got a biker sort of jacket on, he's got the dark sunnies and a dirty little goatee. Like, it just screams villains all over. I mean, the vehicle itself, when you think about it, it's kind of like the Aquaman of that line. You know, the missions all had to be somewhere near water because the little sidecar ejects to become like a submersible type thing. But the fact that the toy itself could carry a second figure, I thought was a really cool feature. And yeah, just looking at that, you just go, oh, bad guy.
Yeah.
I love it.
Very cool. I had that one as a kid. Yeah. We had Piranha. And that satisfaction of launching that submersible sidecar, just out of this world.
Yep.
Lads, I'm going to take you back to the summer or the Christmas of 1980. I'm 5 years old. Empire Strikes Back has been a phenomenal success in the cinemas that year. And of course, loaded up under the Christmas tree, ready for me to open up, is the Imperial Attack Base. Ooh. It's a playset from Empire Strikes Back. They got their information incorrectly because they actually had Darth Vader and the Stormtroopers set up in a defensive scenario yep. inside of this base.
I love
and
that.
If you've seen the film, you know it's actually the rebels who are in the defensive position. But in that, in part of that parcel I received, one of the figures was the Imperial Snowtrooper.
Yeah, yes. Cool.
Yep. And he's just such a remarkable, iconic looking figure. Not just a standout Stormtrooper, but the way he was presented and dressed with the big gun he comes with. Yep. He's got the half cape, the vinyl cape that wraps around and clips into his belt. But he was nice and chunky and large as a figure, as a Stormtrooper. And is honestly my favorite Star Wars retro canon figure that I have. I still have my original when I was a child. Yes, he's lost his cape and he's lost his gun, but I have picked up some decent vintage replacements over time. That is my first call out.
Nice. Beautiful. I love that so much. And yeah, look, to me the Stormtrooper is super iconic, but that first version didn't really capture what a Stormtrooper looked like. He was a bit skinny and his helmet
doesn't look menacing. No.
But they've really improved from there with some of those bad guys, and he is an absolute standout. All right, I'm going to jump into my box of tricks here and pull something out. We're going to go with a bit of superpowers love now. Ooh. And I've pulled out another Kenner figure. There might be a bit of a theme here. We will see. But this is the Joker figure from the Superpowers line, circa 1984, if I'm correct. He's a first wave character. Came with a mini comic. And these all had action features, essentially. What Kenner were doing at the time was a squeezy leg style, squeeze the legs together. And here Joker is... there he goes. He's hitting his mallet on his knee bone to test his reflexes. But there he is. He's got a nice green mallet that he can hit at you. Very, very kind of vintage comic book styling. So he's probably that sort of, 70s, 80s style of Joker. Maybe
Looks closer to Cesar Romero as far as his overall look.
Yep. Yeah. And then the other really cool thing about this Joker figure was his mallet doubles as a hat for him, so it's got a Joker face on there.
Check that out,
or you put that on the good guy's head, and he's Jokerized them.
He's Jokerized them. That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
And the handle is his long Pinocchio style nose. Some nice tails there, coat tails there that I think is a removable piece that you can plug in there, and he's got all the articulation that you would expect. I just thought the design aesthetic of the Superpowers line is so iconic. I've got not a complete collection, but I've got most of them up on my loose shelf, and the color palette that they've selected, you really notice it up there against all my other figures, that the colors they've used are just beautiful. The style and the fact they've been able to capture those iconic comic book looks is second to none. It's something that is really hard to do and pretty much unprecedented, I think, for a lot of the DC toys. So Love that line, but if I had to pick one from it, Joker was my guy.
Fantastic. Great call.
Look at that.
Okay, second on the list, but not in any particular order, is from 1982 from Remco, and it is, of course, Skullman. All right. And I'm talking about the version 2 with the enormous proper white skull head, not the questionable trademark lawsuit skull head that looks like Skeletor. I'm talking about that huge, oversized skull, white face with the black body, red cape, little dagger in one hand, in his open hand that he can barely hold, and then a bow staff with no bows in his other hand. And he's just phenomenal. Like, he just speaks to me in so many ways of... In as far as pinnacle of KO figures or knockoff or bootleg, whatever you want to call them, that Skullman is just the best. He is just so, so cool. And I've just adored him. Luckily enough, I've got a complete one with the original cape and things. And later in my collecting times, I've realized there's different belts and things. So I've actually got two with different belts and stuff. He's just so wicked. I cannot wait to get the Mythic Legion version of him in my hands. Remco knew what they were doing. They, just knew let's make a skull face guy and let's make it oversized, but not stupid bobblehead size, but just big enough to, you know, there's no real...
Not Batman Returns riding on a motorcycle.
But that, I like that. Yeah. I like that one. And that was a proper helmet, wasn't it? Yeah. I just have the utmost appreciation from Skullman. There's no real backstory or anything. You know, he gets lopped in with the Warlords toy line, also from Remco. And, I just think he's fantastic. So sometimes, you know, like a bit like the original Boba Fett, you don't know much about these characters. Yeah. So therefore you can create your own stories and things. So sometimes the more mystery around a character makes them, you know, more elusive and magical than they probably actually are. So, yeah.
Yeah, good call.
Nice. Hey, can I just say quickly, I've been playing a little game here.
Okay.
And that is... see if I can guess what are on other people's lists.
Yeah, okay.
I'm currently 2-2.
Oh, wow. Yeah, nice. Okay.
Baron Kaza was probably in all ways. We sort of worked that one out.
I had, funnily enough, I've done a similar thing, actually. This is going to be interesting when we get to the end and we take stock of our 20.
Sure.
Because I think I've played it very much in the sense I haven't picked necessarily any heavy hitters.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be some core characters in here.
Mm.
But they're not probably the first choice, and Ben's done the same. I thought he was going to do that. I thought he was going to go obscure. I'm just going to put. I don't want to spoil anything, but I had Sectors on my list as well. Yep. So we're going to see how that goes.
Might be correct.
All right. Well, it's 1989. You're Playmates, and you're doing a line that doesn't really have action features in it. So what are you relying on? You're relying on sculpting, and when you're talking that time, sculpting from the Turtles line, of course, you look no further than the Rat King.
Mm.
All right. Probably up there is also General Trag, but again, trying to go a little bit off the beaten track. What you're basically looking at is a horror toy, right? He's got missing hair. He's got a missing tooth. He's got spiders all crawling all over him. He's got a centipede up the front. He's got these bones that are just strapped to him. He's got what looks like scars. His belt is literally made out of a dead cat. No, sorry. The belt itself is a snake with a dead cat for a loincloth.
Roadkill cat.
Roadkill cat, exactly.
He's the closest thing to a living zombie, isn't
he? Right? Yeah. When you think about it, he's actually terrifying. They dialed it down, obviously, in the cartoon. In the 2003 reboot, he comes from an episode that they basically banned on American TV because it was so grotesque as far as it was like a monstrous version of Baxter Stockman, I believe. It was a bit Frankenstein-y and it was super creepy for that era. But this figure, it just doesn't have action feet, doesn't even have a twist waist, you know, sort of punching feature or anything. He's got a bow, like a crossbow that shoots rats because you're the Rat King. And he's got a grappling hook that is made of two rats curved at the end. And you go, what am I looking at here? It's the colors on it and everything. It's just insane.
It is a beautifully sculpted figure. And I like your analogy there with saying the importance of the sculpt when they're not doing gimmicks or action features.
Yeah.
They dotted into this line, like some of the figures have it, but not everyone.
Mm.
And it is a stellar figure. It's a really good call out. And that one is one of these figures that is emblazoned in my mind.
Yeah.
I can just bring him up.
Exactly what he looks like.
And know exactly all the details because I've studied it that many times. So, brilliant call. Love it.
There you go.
All right, on to option two. For me, anyone who's been listening to Toy Power for the last 12 months know that I have alleviated Frank of his Ultimates Silverhawks, and obviously having the wonderful reinterpretation, the modern version of them, I found myself desiring to collect the vintage versions, and it's Buzzsaw. It is the standout. There's two villains in this vintage lineup that are absolutely amazing and iconic, and I was really lucky to get Buzzsaw very early on, complete in amazing condition. And every time I go to my toy shelf and I have a look, my eyes are instantly drawn to that lovely green and yellow, massive robotic armored guy, that villain, and his big orange bird that he's got perched on his arm. He is just amazing in his appearance. You think of a giant robot, if you would, completely encased in armor, and he's got buzzsaw, he's got blades as his primary weapon. It's absolutely bonkers to think of, but a wonderful piece of engineering. And I just love the way the guy appears, his overall presentation, The other figure I like from there is obviously Monstar in his giant appearance as well. But Buzzsaw, you're beautiful, brother.
Yep. Has he got like Buzzsaws on his knees as well? I know he's got his hands and one in his head. Has he got one on his knees? Or am I imagining that?
I can't picture it, but maybe.
No? Okay.
He does have a lot of... I think he's got one on his head. A little, little Buzzsaw there on the head.
Yeah.
Very cool. I received my toy accurate colors version of Buzzsaw from Super 7. Oh. And I have to say, compared to the yellow, it's a 10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
It is just visually so much more pleasing than the cartoon colors. Yep. So, yeah, epic choice. I've been hovering around a lot of these choices when I was going through this list, so this is wonderful. I want to pick out another figure here from the and a bit of left field, but it's a bit of Real American Hero time now.
Oh,
some G.I. Joes, and I had a lot of beautiful Joes to select from. I love that, probably that sort of, you know, 85, 86 era of Joes. That's probably when I was sort of collecting them, and here I've got Big Boa. I think he is just sensational looking, not only from a color palette perspective with the blue pants, the red kind of chest armor piece here, and the bright red boxing gloves. I've just dropped his little stand there, star stands, which are tremendous. But his helmeted head is just such a cool looking little helmet there.
Is he wearing boxing gloves?
He's a boxer. Yep. Yeah, he's wearing boxing gloves. He comes with a punching bag.
So for anyone who knows Strong Bad, it's kind of like if Strong Bad was a G.I. Joe figure.
Strong Arm? Strong Bad?
No. Strong Bad. Isn't it? That's all right. That reference was for Davey and probably no one else.
Okay. Yeah, he's got this little pipe coming down. But yeah, spiked helmet, red visor there at the eyes. And these, there were removable boxing gloves, so
they come off.
I believe so. Yeah,
I was going to ask if the boxing gloves are detachable, because in real life that'd be somewhat problematic if you wear them all the time.
That's right. Really cool. Yeah, there you go. So removable.
That's
boxing
a beautifully
gloves there.
Tight fit.
It is.
He's got really cool sculpted pecs and, you know, leg muscles and things. I think that's really well. You know, for a little tiny 3¾-inch toy, you can actually see the muscles that he's sporting, and he's got a 6-pack here as well. That's really cool. I've seen the classified version. That is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like that is very cool toy.
They've done him with an unhelmeted head in classified.
Yes, yes.
And he's got that real punched up, missing teeth kind of busted up face.
And I love the fact, is it Brazil had the kangaroo, the boxing kangaroo as a, you know.
As a pack-in.
Pack-in with it. So. Yeah.
I get real like Weapon X vibes off of that helmet that he's got on. Like,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're spot on there. Yep.
Beautiful.
Very cool. All right. Hopefully Trent hasn't got this on his list.
Nope.
See if I can trick him one.
All right.
1987, Tonka Snakebite from the Supernaturals.
Didn't have it.
Right?
Nicely done.
So this was the first Supernaturals character I got. And obviously my passion towards or scaredness of snakes, and I've somehow, you know, get attracted to them in toy form. But yeah, Snakebite is, you know, got the lenticular chest, and he's got a lenticular big ass lenticular shield that has a snake sort of, you know, creeping towards you, a big python thing screaming at you. His staff is like two snakes coiled together. Looks amazing. And then he's got this like headdress that is a huge snake head.
You
know, like very Egyptian looking, like
looks
a
like
cobra.
He's out of Stargate.
His you know, Supernaturals being Supernaturals, his staff glows in the dark. He's got like mummified legs, like right up to his crutch, almost his groin piece. That's you know, all grey and things. Very, you know, that's got the Egyptian feel to him. He was the first one I got, and I used to display him with my Master Universe. Yeah, look at, you know, with the Snake Men, just a army build. You know, just give a bit more ranks to the Snake Men. And since then, I've, you know, there's another Supernaturals character. I add that to the collection, and you know, I'm only two away now. I might as well, you know, round out the set of six regular 5-inch characters. So this guy just speaks to me on so many levels, and is just phenomenal. You don't see much, you know, mention of him in any form, media, anything. Even finding a picture online just to show tonight was difficult to find a Google image of him complete. Everyone's got him regular or missing the shield or missing the staff altogether. And I got him for a song all those years ago from a local collector here. And I think I was right place, right time, and didn't appreciate what I was picking up at the time. But certainly all these years later, I certainly do. So, yeah.
Nice. Just on that, I mean, I've always had a soft spot for Supernaturals, but some of them can look a bit odd because they've got so much hologram on them.
Yep.
He has the really nice balance of looking really good as an action figure.
Yep.
The majority of his hologram is on the shield and there's a little bit on the face. And I think that is a beautiful looking figure.
But he can still take his chest piece off and reveal face all the way down to his torso.
That's very clever. Yep. You know, I like that. If I'm going to tell this story correctly, forgive me if I get it slightly wrong, but my understanding is 1 year Darren walked into John Martin. So John Martin's here was the premier toy store in South Australia. Mm. They took a lot of pride in their toy department and they got a lot of toys that the other departments didn't get. Mm. But apparently 1 year Darren was in there and they said, hey, the people there was running, I think it must have been, are they Mattel?
No, whoever, they're Tonka.
Tonka. Yeah. There must have been some toy marketers here. And they're like, look, we want you to come back here and give us some feedback on some images of toys we're going to show you. And so Darren went into this sort of special area and, you know, they revealed what I believe was, if I'm getting the line right, was the Tonka Supernaturals line for feedback.
Wow.
And so he got to see these images
before anyone,
like a year or something before they hit, and then, you know, make a comment. And that was how they were doing. Jeez. That's how they were getting some feedback back in the day, was from interested kids in the toy store to see how they would react to these particular things. I think it's just a lovely story. Yeah. It's so nice that it happened to Darren.
Yep.
Being you know, the lover of toys that he was, and that just little piece of history. Yeah. You know, now it's all internet based, and they can get feedback, and probably negative feedback quite a lot. But it's how it was done back in the days.
Well, I think to this day, San Diego was a big tester for the waters of new toy lines, and what do you think of this, and the votes of, hey, you know, classics, what color Swiftwind should we do? Should we do pink or white? As you leave this room, put your vote in. And, you know, just having those little aspects, you know, are bigger than people think. You know, the attendance of San Diego, probably the 200-300 people in that room decide the rest of the toy line, you know, to a certain extent, for what color scheme a certain character may be. Or
I got to vote on Granomir at the time. We ended up getting both anyway.
Yes, Yeah, very cool.
All right. On to me for choice number three. This is coming from Transformers. So we're talking 1984, wave one, I believe. So the first wave of Decepticons they did. And I'm talking about my boy Ravage.
Ooh, nice.
Cool. Now, I just think he's a huge part of the show, right?
Yes.
And, you know, as we know, quite a bit of discrepancy between the show and what you got with 1984 technology. But probably holds a bit of history in that he's, you think about that particularly that first wave, one of the few toys in Transformers in general rarely gets repainted. And even in the modern stuff, you don't see a lot of Ravages repainted into a lion, for example. Like Steeljaw is probably the closest, but that's a different mold.
Yep.
I believe there's some copies in, and I can hear Colin Betts in my headphones already. I believe Japan have repainted him a few times into various colors, but, you know, the Three Seekers are already there. You know, there's the 15 different color variations of Bumblebee and all that sort of stuff. Doesn't really happen to Ravage. He's arguably the first Beast Transformer there ever was. You know, he predates Beast Wars and that sort of thing. And you look at him and you go, it's a Black Panther.
Yeah.
Right? Now, maybe this is Jungle Book influence because everyone looks at Panthers and goes, oh, they're the villain of the story. But he's unquestionably a bad guy. Almost got that cat. So he's got those cat sort of features to him. Pair of chrome rocket launchers on either side of him. I just think he screams villains.
Mm.
Beautiful.
For a little cassette, he's got some wicked articulation as well. You can get him in some nice poses.
You can get the feet alternating and stuff. He's got that long sort of head.
Yeah. He got the beautiful tail, even though it's, you know, fully straight, but it's really, and you can, his head, like, it's got quite a long neck, so you can, you know, move it, it up
almost,
and down.
It's not anatomically correct, but I think it adds to it, the fact that he's got that long sort of slinky neck, and you can almost make it touch the ground.
And if you ever look at the feet, they're like proper paws. They're not just a blanket, you know, square. It's like actually curved shaped, like a cat's.
And these like forearms, I guess they're metal, right?
Yes.
Yep. So that means it sort of gives it that bit of weight so he can stand without, you know, sort of toppling over.
Yeah, beautiful.
Nice. Excellent call out, Frank. I can visualize Ravage, and I think that's a tremendous call out. Well done. I appreciate the top-end Transformer that you've chosen. My next selection comes from the dollar store Transformers, the GoBots.
Hey, wow. I was wondering.
I love the GoBots growing up because that's what my parents could afford. And the Machine Men, as we called them here in Australia, they hit the market ahead of the Transformers, so they do have that one box in their favour. But they are the toys that I played with. They were my Transformers. And I had guys like Tuxedo.
Yes, I had him too.
a guy who looked ridiculous. Like a submarine. Yep. And they genuinely look like the actual vehicle or device that they were going to be. So the issue was that when they transformed, maybe they didn't look that great as an actual robot, alternate mode. Psykill.
Yes.
The leader of the villains.
Yep.
Was the standout character in the whole line and in the cartoon.
Even the name that just screams villain. Like,
it's just, it's such a good play on words, isn't it? It's just, you look at it, Psy, S-C-Y, and then the word kill.
Yep.
It's bonkers.
A two-wheeled bike, Psy is two, you know?
And please, Google an image of Psykill so you understand what we're talking about. I've got one here on my phone. And if you look at this guy's face, it's a blend of gold and silver, sort of done right across the middle of his face. He's got the most disgusting smile on his face. He's got yellow teeth. He's got big, dark rings around his eyes to really accentuate that villainous look about him. And he just looks like a bad guy. Mm, he's a nasty-looking robot. And he's just so charming at the same time.
Bit of lead piping on the eyes there? Is that?
It could be, And correct me if I'm wrong, you know, listeners and people in this room, but I think he came in two different sizes. I think he came in that little tiny version and he came in a larger deluxe sized. Okay. And obviously the deluxe version is, you know, much more
sought after
and also better, looks better as well. So
there you go.
And they've done a modern version of him as well, which looks absolutely amazing. Do I collect GoBots? No. But I'm really, really on the edge of deciding maybe this is another line I'm keen to jump into if I can sort of find them readily available.
Yeah. I was similar to you, Scott. I had a few of these growing up. They took a lot of damage, I found. There was a lot of chrome. Pretty sure I had a Psykill, but he was trashed. I think my brother had him, actually, and by the time I got him out of the toy box, he was already trashed. We got some images up here.
Looks like there is a couple of repaints. There seems to be a green one and a red
I think,
one.
No, I think so. That one that you've got your finger on, that's the smaller version. And then the more chrome one that you've got on the big picture is the deluxe one.
Right.
And you can sort of see the differences, you know, that you got for the size and price. Yeah.
Mm.
Yep. And I dare say the deluxe one has got a lot more, you know, die cast than the previous one did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Very cool.
Very good. Cool. All right. I'm heading into some Mattel territory now. I think circa 1987, if I've got my dates right. I didn't write any of this down. I'm just going from the top of my head. It is a Brave Star character. Oh, and I was umming and ahhing on Tex Hex, I couldn't go past Thunderstick here. He is one of the hardest to get figures in this line. It's not a huge line, the old Brave Star, but Thunderstick here has a couple of accessories. He's got his cowboy hat, which I managed to pick up in a lot. I don't think they knew what they had because that was hard to track down. He's got a cape. His action feature is essentially an arm that flips out into a little hand cannon sort of gun. But what's great about this guy is his chrome features. So his face is essentially a robot skull. And it's done with that chrome, sort of that back metal there. And he's got these red eyes. You can see his brain there. His brain is exposed on the top there. And
that's
he's
why
got,
he needs a hat.
He needs his hat to cover up his brain. And he's got these beautiful chrome vac metal boots. He is the same sculpt as Tex Hex pretty much in terms of the body and the legs. And I think he's got a new arm piece here or new wrist and hand. But essentially they did use quite a bit of... resculpting there of the
buck. I did not know that he was a redo of Tex Hex. That's how different he looks.
He looks like, so different. Yeah. you wouldn't really pick it that there's so many common features there. And obviously Tex Hex has the armor that kind of changes the look of the shirt, but
hides the detail.
He's a beautiful dark purple with some black accents there on the shirt. And these are a bigger size of figure there. They're in the 8-inch category, so
he's bigger than Stay Puft.
He is, put him there next to Stay Puft. He's a big boy, so
he's the Terminator in a Western setting.
Yep,
in terms of his overall aesthetic, like
it is a cool look. I had some of the Brave Star as a kid. Got this guy collecting. He was a bit harder to get, but I do love this line. Got a soft spot for it.
A lot of people don't like the fact that I've got. His a hat on my Rio Blast because it is a very sought after hat. So but I cherish it because it's the only brown hat. All the others are black and white and things, and it just doesn't mesh as well. Not so I had to go the brown to match Rio Blast. Nice. Good on him. Love anyway. All right, next up on my list is from 1985, Coleco. It is, of course, General Spidrax from the Sectors.
Another one.
Well done.
Three from four.
So General Spidrax, I fell in love with the Sectors line after someone brought it to a trade event, and they're like, look at these puppets and things. I'm like, the beasts and things were amazing. And then like everyone's putting their hands into the beast because the fact that they made them multi-sized for, you know, kids' hands and adults' hands just blew my mind. Like I was just like, that is foreseeing a future beyond just the, you know, the release of this, you know, short-lived line, unfortunately. And General Spidrax himself comes with his spider flyer. Which is notorious for really fragile and things. Those wings, I think, lasted 10 seconds before they didn't work anymore outside the box. But anyway, General Spidrax has these very insectoid helmet, red eyes. This helmet has like huge horns on the top, comes with a big futuristic cannon gun, comes with two little pistols, a whip. Like, what bad guy doesn't want a whip? And his shield with the Sector's evil villains. You know, symbol on it. He's just so cool. He comes in a really shiny purple armor, black arms, black legs with purple boots, and then a red highlights to help him, you know, distinguish that he's really evil. Purebred red eyes. He's sort of almost got eyes running up the top of his helmet as well, making him look like he's got, you know, more eyes than just the regular two. He's just evil incarnate. His harness is really cool because he can hold all his weapons. He can hold the two in his hands, can hold the guns in his holsters, and you know, the shield can go on the back or something. He's just a fantastic villain, and you know, again, doesn't get enough praise, often looked over. Such a short-lived line, unfortunately, but such a wicked-looking villain. And unfortunately, there was a Wave 2 version of him that would have glowed in the dark attributes and things that never came to fruition, but it's out there, and hopefully the Nasil company can you know, get to that eventually.
So, what do you think, just off topic slightly, Zika Toys, which was a slightly smaller scale than the original line, didn't go and do any of the beasts.
No.
Do you think there's any chance Nasil is going to do
beasts? No, I don't. It's just too expensive. They've proved me wrong in the sense that they did the Biker Mice from Mars bikes.
Yep.
I mean, to me, the Biker Mice aren't, you know, they're just mice without their bikes. So Sectors are the same. They need their beasts. But at the same time, the beasts are expensive. Like, they're putting out big characters, and those beasts are even bigger than them. So I'm very comfortable with the Wave 2 releases. I've got my the female.
Yep.
Forget her name off the top of my head, but I've got her. Stellara, that's the one. Hoping for the sort of crocodile bug dude to come out next. If he comes out, he'll come up with a cartoon version of Spidrax, of a General Spidrax, and that'll be really cool. We'll see where the wave goes from there.
Okay.
But they've been a bit slow. Like they've already teased the next Biker Mice from Mars, the evil fish character.
Yep.
And they haven't said anything about the Wave 2 General Spidrax and the green guy yet since the first reveal. But I'm playing the long game, so I'll wait.
Think Nasil has a kind of multimedia property going, so there's going to be animation, and that all takes time to get into gear. So yeah, fingers crossed we get more Sectors going forward.
Yep.
Mm. All right, I'm going to no need for images on this one. We all probably have one in our collection. I'm talking 1984's Masters of the Universe. Clawful.
Oh, they're nice. Yeah, I like that.
I saw Scotty pause there. He's like, uh-oh, we're going to have our first clash.
Excuse me. We're safe.
Yeah, he was one I had as a kid, and I just think probably one of the most satisfying action features just with that. And it just, the spring's still good. A spring from the 80s, it still clamps on. It'll grab He-Man's sword and rip it out of his hand, not a problem. His overall look, someone's just gone, and I know there's a huge variety of action features and sort of stereotypes, if you will. Someone's gone, I had crab for dinner last night. Let's make that a character.
Yep.
Even his armor has got sort of what could almost be mistaken for sort of crab, the crab sort of shell front and back. And then, he doesn't need a sword or an axe or something sharp. He's got that on his hand.
Yep.
So let's give him a club.
Yep.
Right? It makes perfect sense to me. He's not the limelight of any sort of Master's property. Usually most things he only makes a fleeting appearance. I loved what NECA did with him with the Stactions, where he's just this huge brute of a monster. And he's just, one of my favorites from childhood. And he's just... incredible. He's over there. I see Scotty scanning the room about three layers back.
Did you have the Skeletor legs or the Buzz Off legs?
Buzz Off legs is the one I picture.
With the large hoofs
type thing.
I prefer that over the Skeletor. So there's more of the webbed feet, which is Skeletor's feet. Yep. And then there's the big three trident toes style. Type thing.
Yeah, that's what I picture. I'm not sure which one I've actually got.
Because then running up his legs, you've got the bumps and things.
Yeah.
Listening to Toy Geek's podcast, which is absolutely phenomenal. That was Dan Larson's one of favourites, call-outs for his.
There you go.
And he said that was fidget toy before fidget toys existed because of the claw.
Snap.
Yeah, yeah. So that gave me more appreciation. Yeah. Just fantastic colours. Great call, man.
He's the man.
Yep.
Yep. No, respect. Crab.
Yeah, you're right, Frank. I was holding my breath, waiting to hear you announce, thinking that maybe we have a crossover here for the first time, but no, we don't. Mm. I have also chosen from Masters of the Universe from Wave 1. It's my favorite Masters of the Universe figure. It is the Master of the Oceans, the Warlord himself. Merman.
I was close to picking Merman. I've got to say, he's up there for me too. Well done.
Nice. I don't know what it is about this figure. Ever since I saw him in another kid's collection when I was growing up, I just wanted that figure. Yeah. I'd take my Master of the Universe figures to his house because I had the heroes. He had the villains, and I wanted those villains. I've loved the villains from about 5 years of age, and I always wanted Merman. I didn't want He-Man or Masters, Man-at-Arms, Teela. Merman just had some sort of appeal to him. I don't know if it was his barnacle-covered, encrusted sword or his ludicrous eyes and his unique sculpt. He was just so charming. And the color palette.
Yep.
Again, it's the green and the yellow. And I called this out on another figure earlier in the night, Buzzsaw. I think there's a theme here that's speaking to me in terms of what it's all about. And even my last character I'm going to call out has representation of that as well. I'll leave it for you guys to decide. Okay, I'm going to choose.
I think I know who that one is.
Merman is just, he's dumb. He's a brute. He's got charm and personality, and I love the guy.
Excellent.
I am a big... I'm actually a big fan of both of those toys. Clawful caused fights with me and my brother because we, at the time, he was both our favourites. Merman I never had until Dad took me to work one day, and as we were walking back to the car, there was a little toy stall set up somewhere along North Terrace, somewhere around there, and I managed to get myself a secondhand Merman.
Like the sidewalk sale type thing?
I honestly don't recall where it was. Yep.
But it was secondhand.
My brain is telling me it was in the car park.
Right.
I don't think that's right. I don't know who would set up a secondhand toy store in a car park. But needless to say, somewhere between the university and the car park we were parked in, I got Merman along the way. Took him home, had a bath that night, and of course, Merman went straight into the bath where he belongs and where you shouldn't be putting your action figures. But great call. And look, I find it odd that as I reveal my last figure, not one Masters figure in there.
Mm.
I did sort of play the game that Masters was going to be popular as a collective.
Sure.
So I sort of thought I'll leave that to someone else to speak to, but I do love my Masters. My last figure here is Star Wars. So we have a repeat in toy line, but a different character. I have here from 1980, Boba Fett. Mm. Again, I never had him never got him new growing up, but there was a secondhand sale at one of my brother's friend's house. They were clearancing some of their toys, and I think I picked up, not this version, this is a newer, more minty version, but I picked up my Boba Fett from that. He was trashed, but he was...
You got him.
I got him. I was super happy. Nice. No gun, obviously, from that secondhand sale. So no rocket firing feature, but that didn't bother me at the time. I wasn't actually aware there was a rocket firing Boba Fett promised to kids, sending in coupons that they never got. So I never burnt by that. Always thought he didn't quite capture the look that he should.
He's a bit more colourful in toy form than how he's shown on screen.
Yeah, but I've grown to love the design aesthetic of the Kenner version. Mm. And I love the fact that, you know, the Kenner figures aren't super, super accurate, you know, as we would expect them to be nowadays.
He's dropped his gun.
It's just down there. But you know, we've got that now in Black Series. We've got perfect screen accurate versions of these. So that kind of placates me in a sense. It allows me to love the imperfections, the fact, as Scotty said, they didn't know who was defending the base, who was attacking the base.
Take Castle Grayskull, for instance. You know, do this for Castle Grayskull. This is Castle Grayskull. This is for the Master Universe line. These are the toys. Here you go. Yeah. Okay, so this obviously is Skeletor's castle. Skeletor defending the castle. Oops, he's actually fighting for, you know, to gain access. Oh, well. And, you know, that's lived on. Like the charm of the, you know, of information, like communication, dare we say. Every time I go past a vintage Boba Fett, or like mostly it's the carded repo ones and things, I'm always, you know, like looking at it like, oh, maybe this is the day, but I passed it every time. But yeah, I adore Boba Fett. He's probably my favorite Star Wars character. So very cool that he got a call out tonight. Okay, coming from my thing, we have a double up again. Ooh. We have 1986 from Tonka or Bandai. I've got from the GoBots or Machine Men.
Oh, a double GoBot! I hadn't picked that. No, wow. I hadn't even picked a single GoBot.
We have from my collection the pinnacle, what I call, of the GoBots range.
Tuxedo.
Monstrous, right? Monstrous, right? I think
I need a picture.
I think this guy is probably on par, if not better, than some of the G1 Transformers, right?
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
He is I think he was in Japan called Satan 6, right?
Right.
So he is just absolutely phenomenal, so colourful, and comes in, like, much like Devastator did, comes in 6 different parts, right? And mine is, you know, dare I say, so in such great condition. When I posted photos online and things, people said, oh, has he had a reissue?
Oh, wow.
Because they couldn't believe how beautiful and things and the Chrome was and stuff. So that's a massive, you know, thanks to Avon Fox who helped me out. I helped him out with some toys and he said, what do you want? I've got access to, you know, billions of bots. And I said, well, I want Monstrous. So he gave me that for a fantastic price and I couldn't have, it's like out, straight out of the box. It is fantastic. So Monstrous is made up of six Monstrous members, Fright Face and Heart Attack forming the body, Southclaw and Weird Wing as the arms, and Gore Jaw and Fangs as the legs. These guys are the you know, idea of monstrous looking robots. They transform into hideous looking, you know, transformations. They're just complete monsters. You've got bats, you've got you know, like pterodactyl things. They're just absolutely fantastic. Every limb is a different color, even the torso is green and the top half is blue. It's just fantastic. His head is a complete monster. Instead of regular hands, they're huge pincers, like four clawed pincers. I just have, you know, nothing but respect for this guy and I'm just so excited to have him in my collection. He is just, yeah, fan-freaking-tastic.
I've seen him in your collection before, and I've always just gone, that's a weird Power Rangers villain. Like,
GoBots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I am looking at an image here. Frank's got some pictures up here on the screen. The GoBots wiki, they're monster GoBots, second down from the left. There's two guys in there. There's like a blue kind of space eagle thing with red eyes and then there's this like monster thing. I think I might have even sold you one of these. I had those two as a kid.
The two, the left and the right, I bought off you from your mate that was selling them.
That may be the case, but I also had those two. And they worked for me probably better than some of the, you know, tuxedo GoBots that I had, because they weren't trying to be Transformers. They were their own thing. They've got their own aesthetic. They looked great. And I think that's the same with this monster vehicle here. He's beautiful in his own right. He doesn't, he's not sort of terribly goofy. Doesn't have a chrome tuxedo hat, top hat.
There is a another variant of this, and they're all sort of browns and grays color. They're a lot more uniformed color piece.
I like that though.
Yeah, I prefer the color. You know, I'm
so they're Michael Bay. Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know the whole details, but you know, once you start going down this you know, rabbit hole, you find out all these things that you didn't even know existed. And these guys are just phenomenal. So. Monstrous from the GoBots or Machine Men. Check it out.
Very cool. All right, my final shout out for tonight going to 1986 from LJN, about the size of your Brave Star line there, but I'm talking Thundercats, and it's got to be Mumra.
I
did look at some of the villains. I had a fair Thundercats collection. Hammerhand. One of the berserkers and stuff. But you can't go past Mumra. When you look at it, he's this big blue Adonis with these Egyptian vibes. He's got the scary looking hat going on. He's got the you know, bandages sort of flailing off him. Like, he's designed to be in the wind, right? Because he looks more scary. He's got the big cape. I did love in the 2011 reboot, they added these big demon wings to him. Yes. And I'm just like, that just added more presence, I think. But from the toy perspective, the toy was perhaps a little bit underwhelming in terms of, you know, they could only make it so much bigger.
He's still pretty big though. He's one of the bigger figures.
He is taller
in that line
than your average like Lino and these sorts of ones. But the because again, there was two versions of him in the original toy line. One that had like he had the little whatever called power ring or something in the back where you could get his eyes to light up, and he had the Battle-matic, you know, swinging arms sort of thing. He had that huge, like, I don't know the style of the sword, but it was all like jagged and black, a black blade. I think again in the in the reboot, they gave that sword a name, like the Sword of Plundar or whatever, and, you know, functioned a bit like the Sword of Omens. He had that little again, I think Egyptian inspired sort of curvy dagger thing as well. And he came with Marmot as well, which was just an incredible little
nice
toy.
Pack in. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, a really good call out. It's interesting. When Super 7 did their Thundercats line, they've done it more like the cartoon. And I love having the cartoon accurate version of Mumra. Always wanted that. Prior to getting the Super 7 version, I think Icon Heroes did a statue.
Yeah.
And that was my stand-in for a long time. It fits in still very nicely into the aesthetic. But I didn't know how much I loved that toy and the colors of that toy until Super 7 put out their toy accurate LJN version. And then when I had that in front of me, I'm like, this is what I need in my toy collection, just updated. Mm. And same with Lino, they did him very much in that style. So he is a beautiful toy. And again, those colors, albeit not, doesn't really quite look like the colors of the cartoon.
Mm.
They work really well as a toy, that turquoise color, that red, the black.
Yep.
He is a very, very cool figure.
All right, we're going to round out this with my final selection. A little bit of a controversial choice, if I might say. Controversial because he's been both a villain, a really recognizable villain, but he's also gone to the other side of the spectrum and been a hero defender of the Earth. And, of course, I'm talking about another green and yellow-inspired figure, the giant avocado himself. Shogun Warriors Godzilla.
Yeah. Well done. Before recording, Scotty comes in and goes, hey, did anyone go, like, pick a neutral figure, like a neutral character? And I'm like, okay, that's Godzilla.
I'm going to put him in the villain iteration because that's the way I want my Godzilla to be. He is a menace. He's a destructive force of nature, and that's how he appears best on screen for me and in comic book form as well. And just such an iconic, amazing character. Mm. He sits, he's a centerpiece of my collection, and I've spoke about him so many times. And any opportunity I get to talk about him, I'm going to take it. Shogun Warriors Godzilla, let's round it out, boys. No crossovers.
Yeah, that was impressive.
No double ups.
Well done.
That was pretty cool. Well done. How did we find this? Was this a good, fun exercise that we
could... I think having the restrictions on it was good. Rather than just go pick your top five characters of all time, whatever, it's going to be your Shredders and, you know, whatever else is always, you know, Leonardo for me or whatever. But so I think having the decade and the restriction of being figures and the restriction of being villains forced you to sort of go, you know, to look at alternative options. And again, the no double ups rule. I had that sound ready to go for a double up. And I think we all know each other's tastes well enough to go, oh, I reckon, you know, Ben's going to pick Baron Carza, so I'll stay away from Micronauts sort of thing. So
yeah,
I thought it was good. Yeah, good variety.
Do we want to shout out any of the backup choices?
Yeah, I was just going to call out the backups. I had one for sort of each, because I think the theory was if someone called out, say, Rat King in my example, then I had to have another sort of sub from the same line. So I had from Mask, I had Vampire, which is the red bike.
Nice.
Krang from 1989 Turtles. I had Shock.
The Walker. Love it.
With the Walker, Shockwave from Transformers was my Transformers backup. Yep. I figured I thought he might be one to get a shout out.
I've got a Transformer on the backup.
Had Leech from Masters of the Universe as a backup toy. And Marmot himself from Thundercats.
Nice.
Yeah. Did he get a standalone card?
He did. They released him in their companions. Yeah, the companions. Him and Snarf and that.
Oh, wow.
More articulated than
I had
that.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah, okay. I had a couple of others. Just I had Hacker from Centurions.
Yes.
Yeah, he's just this big, dumb, blue brute.
Yeah, yes.
And then Star Wars, I had the Tusken Raider.
Oh, nice, cool. Yeah, I like it. I'm supremely confident I didn't have any backup choices whatsoever.
Look at it.
I'll just call out. I had a massive list, but I'll call out a few. We did talk about this, and I know it wasn't allowed, but I was going to just break the rules and put it on anyway because it's so cool. I had the T-Rex from Dino Riders.
Oh, that was going to,
But we agreed that that wasn't
a vehicle.
Quite, that may come in
is
later.
Is it though, or is it a beast?
It's a beast, yes. I had Buttons McBoom Boom from the Cops line.
Yes.
I also love Turbo Two-Tone from that line, but Buttons McBoom Boom has that fold-out chest. He's wearing a bloody pink zoot suit. I mean, jeez, it's absolutely brilliant. What else did I have on here? Yeah, I had Mum-Ra. I had Darth Vader.
Mm. Yes.
Lightsaber feature. Mm. I had things like Skeletor and Shredder on there as well. My most left field, if Buttons McBoom Boom isn't left field enough for you, I also had Fade Rautha Harkonnen, played by Sting from the OG Dune movie on
here. Oh, wow.
Because I just love that figure. I love that Sting face sculpt. Yeah. They've captured it so beautifully. I think it's some of LJN's best work on that figure.
Fantastic. All right. For my backup, I had four. So from 1987, Mattel, I had Ninja from Master of the Universe. Mm-hmm. All right. Freaking that guy is just so mysterious. And I think, you know, the less we know about him, the better, the more cooler the character is. From 1984, Galoob, Golden Girls, Moth Lady. She was the entry level into my, oh my gosh, these guys, these girls are so much cooler than She-Ra. What is this toy line? I need to know more. So that was, Moth Lady was my first entry point. King Cobra from the 1987 Hasbro Takara from Battle Beasts.
Yes.
He's classed as a Decepticon. So. Yep.
Nice.
King Cobra. And then, of course, from Transformers, none other than 1986 Hasbro's released Predaking. Oh, right. Gosh. The five Predacon members, Dive Bomb, Headstrong, Rampage, Tantrum, and Razorclaw are just, that is the a coolest. Combiner, perfect, you know, version of a combiner from Transformers, in my opinion.
Love the list. I did have a Battle Beast on my list for you, Ben. Triple Threat Snake.
Yes.
Yeah. He not considered a bad guy, but you went... King Cobra.
Yeah, King Cobra, because he's more elite. He's just got that king motif. He's just Series 3, so they start to get very hard to find. So Triple Threat Snakes, Wave 1, so he's easy to army build.
Gotcha.
And then you've got the Stone Cobra, which is just a grey granite version of King Cobra, which is just, like, that'll cost you $1,000 if you've got that to spare, so...
Speaking of Battle Beasts, I've been working on the second Toy Power album, and I have in the can. It is done. It takes a while. I have a Battle Beast tribute to Ben.
Oh wow!
To the very loose soundtrack of Billy Joel's "We Didn't Start the Fire." And I reckon I've listed off all 100 Battle Beasts in that.
Nice. So there's 76 Battle Beasts and 112
total. Are we going to play that?
I don't
have it with me.
I mean, I know there's been some controversial copyright issues and other podcasts with that particular song. I'd like to steer away from it if possible.
It's so different sounding. You won't pick any resemblance to the song.
Maybe
and
I know you're talking about
the geek dudes
take
there.
Take us about 7 years to get through them all.
but actually, just while we're
we'll pause each episode and I'll talk about why I like that character the most.
Yeah. While we're on the mixtape volume 2,
wave 2, isn't it?
Wave 2. Yes, yep. Let's get the names right. Mixtape wave 2. I think I mentioned it briefly when we recorded last, but my favorite song off that album, and in fact, I've got two versions I can't pick, they're both going to go on there, is it's the Flash Gordon song by Queen.
Yeah.
But it's a song about, instead of about being about Flash, it's about cash. And how this hobby soaks up all our cash. And there's a line at the end, I think, where it's, Flash, we've only been together for 14 hours and...
Yes.
And my line is like, Cash, I've only had you 14 hours. And now I have to spend you. But just some of it's very close to the actual lyrics of the song.
I can't wait.
But just change to Cash. And then it's
so good.
The Cash.
I've got a new ringtone for my phone, haven't I? I love it.
And the last thing before we move on, I've got a Take It Away, Big Saxy. Saxophone solo.
Yes!
Lost Boys. Yeah.
Inspired by Lost Boys. So there's going to be all these little hidden references.
Well, let me start working out, and I have to find a big shirt off, necklace, and, you know, grease my hair.
I'm having, as Nick Greenslade said when he was listening to the album, someone's having weight. Oh, no, sorry. It was Brett.
Yes, Brett, someone had a lot of fun.
Someone's having too much fun making this thing. how are we going for time? What are we at?
We're pretty much on an hour.
All right. Do you want to do a quick RWP?
Let's do that.
Quick one.
Reading, watching, playing.
I'll start us off. I just want to touch on a couple of things very quickly, but Dark Matter is an Apple original, starring Australia's very own Joel Edgerton, written or based on the novel by Blake Crouch. It's about a physicist who invents a machine to go to different realities. different versions of himself. Jennifer Connelly's in this as well, mm-hmm. as his wife. Jimmy Simpson from Westworld.
Yep.
The younger version of the man in black, played by Ed Harris at the end. I really love Jimmy Simpson as well. So really enjoying it. It's I think the final episode has dropped tonight as we record this. So if it's an 8 episode, we're up to episode 7. And there's one of those scenes that leaves you on a cliffhanger at the end of episode 7 that just gave me goosebumps the way they shot this scene. It was brilliant. So very, very interesting show. I'm also watching The Acolyte. This is the new Star Wars show.
Haven't started that yet.
3 episodes in. Again, episode 4 has dropped tonight. Very different style of storytelling. It's really kind of like almost like a murder mystery revenge plot. Someone may have dubbed it as, you know, like a Kill Bill sort of style. It's not obviously as graphic as Kill Bill, but there's a bit of the Jedi in this are very restrained, so they don't like to crack out the lightsaber unless they really need to. And I think the thing is, you know, they'll only bring it out if they're going to kill. And so they have another defensive style of sort of martial arts that they use in this, which is quite interesting. But just, yeah, really enjoying seeing some more Jedi.
Mm. Yeah. I really enjoyed Acolyte episodes 1 and 2, and I appreciate number 3 was a bit of a history lesson of where the stories come. But I felt it took it down. Like we were, you know, speeding down the whole highway episode 1 and 2, and then we hit the brakes on number 3. No, number 3 episode needed to be told.
Yes.
The history of what we've seen so far, but it just slowed the, you know, slowed the pace down.
I was expecting it to be maybe that backstory to be told in sort of half an episode length, and then, you know, the later half, or they'd intersperse the current timeline.
Yep.
So I was a bit surprised it went on for as long as it did, and I take your point.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see what episode 4 gives us.
Yeah. For me, I can't go past The Boys. Season 4, it is potentially I think it is the last season.
Season 5.
They're doing one more.
They're doing one more. I'm getting mixed up. There's another season, something that's come, I think, anyway, whatever. So The Boys is just absolutely phenomenal. Everything from Multiplicity scenes.
Oh, yes.
The human centipede.
Ice rink scene. It's just a bloodbath out there. You know, yeah, it's just absolutely fantastic. They cannot do no wrong. Homelander is at his boiling point every episode and just going absolutely crazy. I wondered how the world's smartest woman would fit in, but she's just beautifully put in there. And then, you know, she does something to herself to dumb herself down, which is just like, wow, they're not holding anything back. It's crazy. So absolutely phenomenal show. Watching Sweet Tooth with the family. That's the one that's the last season, I believe.
Okay.
That is a fantastic season. Every time you're like, what else have they got to show us? We've got Arctic foxes now as hybrids. We've got wolf children as hybrids. It's just out of control. Like, it's just so heartwarming. Such a great family show to watch, and absolutely captivating with each and every episode. So, really, really enjoying that. And then I'm just watching I'm watching Justice League, the old cartoons from sort of season 1 as a background, while I do house chores. So
nice.
That's pretty much where I'm at.
I would agree with The Boys. I haven't seen the 3rd episode as yet. We've been a little bit slack, and I think another one, I think they drop Wednesday nights as well.
Friday night.
Cool. Yep. So I got time. But my boss came into the office and we were all, The Boys, have you seen? And he goes, yeah, what was that bit like? The thing where he looks at the phone and he goes, was that meant to be blurred out? And we're like, no. He goes, yeah. And then there was something where, you know, and the guy's, what happened to the guy? And he suddenly got no head. And we're like, did you download a censored version of The Boys of all shows? And he's like, yeah, I must have. While we were recording this.
Do you know what happened in the episode?
Right?
At all?
Just like, you must have lost about 10 minutes of airtime if they censored out everything. He's just sent me a message while we were recording, just with a picture of a centipede just crawling up a dude's arm. Yep. And he goes, so the 2nd episode was not censored.
That's the one he wished was censored.
Yeah, right. So that was cool. As far as playing, Jack is finally getting into video games. We had a transition sort of meeting at the school, and so we dropped him in at the sort of the osh there for the school for the hour we were there. Turns out they had a Switch there, and him and his little buddy got the Nintendo Switch out, and his friend was actually quite good at Mario Kart, so Jack was largely watching. Next thing you know, he wants to come home, wants to grab the Switch, and I will say the best thing when he's at that age, he still really hasn't worked out the controls, but you put it on 50cc with the auto steering and the auto accelerate. You just about can't lose.
Yeah.
He's I've seen him win a race when he's not actually even got his hands on the controls at all. And look, Daddy, I won. I was like, And then he's like, do you want to play? And I'm like, oh, yeah, let's play two player. And he's like, no. He says he wants me to play, but then is not prepared to like disconnect the controllers from the little screen. So I'm just like, all right, this is a learning phase. But when you want to play, I will destroy you.
Yeah.
So I look forward to that.
Reading, watching, playing for me, it's not actually toy or pop culture related. A while back, Joe and I picked up on Netflix the Drive to Survive Formula One reality show, and I think they're about 6 or 7 seasons into it at the moment, but we became addicted to it very, very quickly. It's very well put together, amazing personalities. The drivers, the guys who run the teams, the owners of the teams, they've done a tremendous job of putting together a collection of personalities that boil off the screen. And yes, it's reality TV. Do they create a little bit of drama? 100%. Do they embellish some of the details? 100%. But damn, it is done really, really well.
What's the setting for this? Sorry? Like, is it like
F1?
Formula One.
It's Formula One. Right. Sorry if I wasn't clear on that. So essentially what Netflix do as a film crew is they follow the circuit for 12 months of the year.
Right.
And they sort of talk to the drivers on and off the track. They talk to the owners of the teams on and off the track. And they get access to essentially everything, the audio, the video, the behind the scenes. So they can piece together whatever storyline they think is going to work for them. And a lot of it, if you have a look on YouTube about, you know, how it's all sort of put together and people analyzing the story Netflix create, they pull it apart. They just cobble together whatever works for them to make an intriguing story. It's reality TV. It is what it is. It served its purpose for Joe and I. We now religiously watch Formula One racing. We're in the middle of the season at the moment, and sort of every second weekend we do a race weekend where we'll watch the qualifying and the practices and the main race. Depending where the race is being held, like this coming weekend, it is in Spain. So we're going to get paella.
Nice.
We're going to get some cava from Spain. We're going to get a Spanish dessert. That's the theme that we have.
That's brilliant. Cool.
The meal is constructed around wherever the race is being held.
And do you have to watch it live, or you're happy to watch a replay the next?
I'm not insane. I'm not getting up at midnight on a Sunday to watch a live race. So that means I've got to have a social media blackout all day Monday. So we don't spoil the result of the race. But we will get home from work on a Monday.
That's brilliant.
And
that's
literally sit down from 5 o'clock and and watch
it. So when the Grand Prix is in Melbourne, do you just feed yourself an overpriced coffee? Is that how that goes?
Yeah, bad coffee. terrible tap water over there apparently.
Well, what's up with their chocolate milk? Big M.
Big M, what is that? Right?
And they don't even have Villies over there. I mean, they are missing out in the biggest way.
None of those were directed at you, Fresh, at all. Wonderful. Well, that's good. There's some good watching I got to get to. I got to get to the boys. I don't have an Amazon Prime. I need to get myself an Amazon Prime.
It's too much. I don't have Apple, and you're always spruiking all the Apple programs.
There's too many. Yeah, too many.
It's sort of impossible to keep up.
I need the Frank streaming service.
Can be arranged.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Toy Power. It is always wonderful to have your company. And to all our patrons, thank you so much for your ongoing support and chatter on the Discord. Stay safe and take care of one another, and we will see you around the toy aisles.
And until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.